you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canobio, joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Chris Algieri, and we're presented by PPV.com. Order Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia April 20th and use PPV.com, the best way to order pay-per-view events. You can stream it to your phone. You can stream it to your tablet. You can stream it to your big screen TV. We have a live interactive chat that I will be in. Chris will be in there. Jim Lampley will be in there. Lance Pugmire will be in there. No other pay-per-view platform offers the live interactive chat. It's a really cool way to talk to us, to ask Chris questions, to talk to Jim Lampley. And the best part about PPV.com is there are no subscriptions. None. You order the fight, no strings attached. A lot of subscriptions out there in the boxing world, but not with PPV. It is PPV.com. It is a great way to order fights. April 20th is our next big event. Ryan Garcia taking on Devin Haney. Chris, how are you?
I'm great. And just to speak a little bit about PPV.com, I hate subscriptions, man. There's so many subscriptions these days. So not having a subscription to actually watch fights, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you ever like, there's like these apps out there that could show you that how many subscriptions you have, or like double subscriptions. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm paying twice for something. It's aggravating. And one of the best things at PPV.com is no subscriptions, no strings attached. They are the best. They are a presenting sponsor of Inside Boxing Live. Go follow them on social media.
They're kick ass.
Yeah, they're awesome. Okay. Talking about Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, that is a big fight that is less than 10 days away. There are some big fights on the upcoming schedule that are on the way. So it got me thinking, why don't we rank the biggest upcoming fights on the boxing schedule? We're in fight season, Chris. Fight season. It's about to be a crazy, crazy couple of months on the boxing schedule. Heavyweight unifications. Inoue is back, pound for pound implications, a light heavyweight undisputed fight, fights up in the vacant titles all over the globe, different continents. We're heading into the meaty part of the boxing season. I'm ready for it. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, of course I'm ready for it, man. Come on. This is we had an off year a couple years back when we first started, and we were complaining because we weren't getting all these big fights, and now we're getting them. So of course I'm happy. And it gives us lots to talk about. Lots for you guys to listen to, so that's always a good thing as well.
Yeah, so let's get into our five. I'll start it off. This is tough. I mean,
I'm compiling my list over here. I'm putting it in order. I had it all jumbled. Excuse me. Go ahead.
It's really hard. It's hard to put together just five because there's so many good ones out there. But at number five, I'm gonna go Naoya Inoue versus Luis Nery, May 6th. Mm. That is a Monday morning in Tokyo, Japan, at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
Not one of these other arenas. This is the first boxing event at the Tokyo Dome since Buster Douglas laid out Mike Tyson in 1990. Inoue doing his thing at 122 pounds. Luis Nery, hard punching, coming back from that one loss that he had. Anytime Inoue steps into the ring, it's must-watch TV. It's must-watch television. I'll get up at the ass crack of dawn. It's become a ritual. Put my robe on, get my coffee, interact with the fans out there, watch that guy in the middle of the ring with his electric guitar. It's an awesome experience, and I also just think it's going to be a really good fight because Nery has a lot of power, and I want to see if he can land something on Inoue. I want to see if Inoue really is invincible.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of implications to this one. You mentioned the Tokyo Dome. Inoue, one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound. I love those morning fights, too. I think it's a lot of fun to just to wake up early and get some fights going. Great way to start a day. But I'm going to disagree on this one. I don't have this one anywhere near the top. Surprisingly. You know I love Inoue. And you know I like Nery a lot, too. I think his fight with Azat was my fight of the year last year. It's awesome. I don't know how competitive this is going to be. Nery is moving up in weight. Obviously, Inoue has been moving up. But Nery has a weakness to the body. And Inoue is a vicious, consistent body puncher. And the jab that he has, I don't know, man. I don't know. I know we are excited for the fight. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that it's definitely going to be super competitive or that Nery really has a chance. So because of that, I have it way down my list.
Well, part of my list is I put big event. I have the event in there.
I understand where you're coming from. I like when we disagree, though. It's good to disagree.
Yeah, of course. I know you do a lot of that over on the pro box side of things.
That's pretty much my job here. My job is to disagree with people.
You and Paulie just going at it. we're usually on the same page, me and you. But yeah, I think Inoue is going to win comfortably. I do think there'll be some moments, but I'm going with like a big fight feel. I'm going with the Tokyo Dome aspect. I'm going with all of that. At number, what do you have at number five?
That's your number five. Oh, I thought we were starting at the top. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my number five is Canelo Munguia. That's the speak on how good this, you know, these next coming months are, because I think it's a really good fight. I'm happy for that fight. I'm excited for the fight. Obviously we all want David Benavidez. But I just think that Munguia is a little tailor made for Canelo, unless Canelo got old, which is a very real possibility. But I think it's gonna be a really fun fight. We're going to be there in Las Vegas. It's going to be awesome. We got two Mexican warriors going at it, and they are, and Munguia is a warrior. He's going to be there to be hit. So I got, that's my number five. I'm sorry. I thought we were going from top to bottom.
Well, we got to build the suspense, you know, we got to build a crescendo, if you will,
gotcha.
If you will, like build up to the main event. Like, you know, right now these are big fights, but we're talking like first get into the arena, walk out bout, you know, the we're all getting ready in our seats for the main event, but I got Canelo Munguia four. So we're kind of on the same page there. I think that as we get closer to this fight, I think as we get a little bit away from the Benavidez-Canelo drama that hasn't really been in the headlines the last 2 weeks, it was 2 weeks ago, was all we could talk about. We'll start to settle into watching Canelo again. How many times are we going to watch Canelo fight for the rest of his career? It's probably down to, you know, five or six big fights left. This is one of them. I like the Mexican versus Mexican aspect of this. I like... Yep. The pomp and circumstance. I love the tradition. Boxing is a show. Boxing is performance, and they're going to roll out all of that for this fight. I'm really looking forward to the atmosphere when we're out there in Las Vegas. On top of that, I think this is going to be a really fun fight. I really do. I really think that Munguia brings something to Canelo that we haven't seen in his last couple fights. Charlo didn't throw any punches at all. John Ryder did not really impress towards the end, yeah, he just hung around.
He wasn't expected to, though, honestly. He wasn't expected to impress.
He kind of exceeded. Right, exactly. That's my point. Like, Caleb Plant did not throw a lot of punches, did fight well. But Munguia is going to bring the fight to Canelo, and we haven't seen that in a while. At least we think that Munguia is going to bring the fight to Canelo. He might shell up, and he might...
Yeah, Canelo is a good, has a knack for handcuffing guys because of his counter-punching and his power.
Look what he did to Charlo. I mean, Charlo did nothing in there. So
Callum Smith is another one. Completely handcuffed him. Hands are in his pockets all night.
Punched him in the freaking bicep until his bicep fell off. you know, BJ Saunders didn't throw a lot of punches. So Munguia is going to bring something to Canelo that we haven't seen in a while, and that is just walk forward, kind of reckless abandon. And Canelo is a great counterpuncher. He's a great body puncher. This is going to be an awesome fight. I know fans don't want this fight necessarily. They want Benavidez. But, man, this is a good runner-up. This is a good consolation prize. I have it at number four, but you have it at five. So let's go to your number four then.
My number four is Inoue and Nery. And I normally would have this a lot higher. You know, I spoke down about the fight, but it's only because we have so many good fights. So, yeah, this is my number four. And it's because, like what I said, I love Inoue. I love when Inoue fights. I think it's really meaningful, the Tokyo Dome, the morning fights, everything about it. I love his style, everything he does. He's fundamentally so, so damn good, so fun to watch, so smooth. But I don't have it higher because I don't necessarily think this is going to be a very competitive fight. And I do think that Inoue is going to stop Nery probably in the mid rounds.
Less than 48 hours after Canelo Munguia will be Inoue Nery. That's going to be an awesome time for fight.
We're going to be recovering from Vegas and getting up early to watch that fight.
Well, it probably might work out because when I get back from Vegas, my sleep schedule is so messed up that maybe getting up at 5 or 6, which for most people, that's the time people usually get up out there in the workforce. I'm a podcaster. I usually rise at like 9 a.m. and get a nice coffee and then start my day. I understand that I'm a little different than the rest. But yeah, 48 hours after Canelo Munguia will be Inoue Nery Tokyo Dome May 6th. All right, number three for me is a fight that just got announced that I'm really excited for. It's our guy Bam taking on Juan Francisco Estrada. Jesse Rodriguez getting back into the ring, taking on a pound-for-pound great. This is June 29th in Arizona. Love this fight for so many reasons, Chris.
Yeah, that's a fantastic fight. Just got announced. It was kind of surprising. It was one of those fights that listen, if you know boxing, if you know those smaller weights, like, yeah, this is an awesome fight and one you would hope for. But like the fact that they were to make it kind of, you know, behind the closed doors and behind the scenes, wasn't a lot of talking about it, just got announced. It was like, oh yeah, awesome. But it's also a can't miss fight. It's a really, really good fight. Bam is another one of my, he's one of my favorite guys. You know, Inoue's up there. Bam's one up there as well. One of the most exciting guys in the sport. He looked so good in his last fight. And he's improving each and every time. And I think Estrada, who is on almost everyone's pound for pound list, usually in the second half of their top 10, super, super stiff test, still has enough to beat a guy like Bam. It makes me think of Chocolatito when he fought Martinez. And it was like, everyone's like, all right, this is the end. This is the end of Chocolatito. Martinez is the next guy. And then Chocolatito puts on a virtuoso performance. Classic of himself, throwing a million punches and outwork Martinez down the stretch, wins a fight. It's like revamps his career. So there's an opportunity for Estrada to do just that against Bam here. So I'm curious to see, man. Hey, listen, experience is one of those things. You can't put a number to it. It's an intangible, but it's very, very meaningful. But Bam's my guy, man. I'm always rooting for Bam.
You bring up the experience factor in boxing. It's so interesting. It's different than any other sport because it's so physical. And yep. You're talking about experience, and it's like, yeah, experience, I think a double-edged sword, in my opinion. Like, it's good to have those rounds. It's good to have that experience. But if you're a little long in the tooth, this isn't like baseball where you can't catch up to the fastball. This isn't like basketball where, you know, you can't run up and down the court like you could. If you are – if you're past it in boxing, you're getting beat up.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting 10, you know, 12 rounds of getting beat up. You're getting stopped brutally.
But you're also carrying the damage from that experience. Every right. fight takes a little bit out of you. And the more fights you have, the more experience you have, especially at the high level, it takes it out of you. Yeah, I was a smarter fighter at the end of my career, but my body wasn't the same. I couldn't take the punches the same way. I couldn't, you know, put out the same output the same way. Reactions change. You know, father time's a real thing, but also damage is a real thing. So those are intangibles that you have to think about.
That must be such a strange feeling as a pro athlete to feel your body kind of betray you a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a 100% betrayal of your body and your skills, especially, and that's why aging is insidious. It's a funny thing. It's like it creeps up on you. You don't realize it, and then one day you're just like, wait a second, I used to be able to do this, or you look back and you look at your old fights. So I was like, oh man. You know, it's just one of those things, man. And every athlete goes through it.
What about, like, did you have any, like, fear? I wouldn't say fear because you're a boxer. You don't have fear. But when you started to feel your body kind of creep up and you couldn't do things you normally could do, did you start to have a little trepidation about stepping into the ring and potentially getting hurt?
No. I just was aware of it and knew that I needed to change my style, and I did. And if you really look at my career in totality, you realize I was a different fighter in those last couple of fights. Everyone always thinks of me as a boxer and a mover, but if you watch my last one, I was a stalker. I walked everybody down. I threw a million punches still. I always had the gas tank, and I think I was a lot physically stronger. I hit harder in my later years because I was more flat-footed, but I wasn't just the fleet-footed, you know, stylist like I was early on. Later on, I was more of, you know, trying to hurt people and do damage. I always threw a lot of punches, but sat down on them a lot more because I couldn't move the same way. I couldn't react the same way. And I knew that, and I understood it. And I knew I was going to take more damage later on, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. That's what I see for aging fighters. To use an example is like Arizandy Lara. Early on in his career, you're talking about a master boxer, depended on footwork, depended on outlasting fighters with, you know, with boxing in there. And as he got older, right. And as he got older, this guy was just stationary, sitting down on his shots, knocking guys out now at age 40. You could look into that however you want to look into that. But he changed his style up completely. And Pacquiao kind of did the same thing too. Pacquiao was throwing, even when he was fought you, he was throwing 75 to 80 punches around, reckless at times. But he slowed it down tremendously. When he was fighting the Broners, when he was fighting Thurman, when he was fighting those PBC guys, he was bringing it down to 45 punches a round, making those, you know, five or six punches really count of his 18 landed. It's interesting. It's interesting to talk about the experience in boxing and what you got to do in there. We'll see what Estrada does. We're talking about a guy that is on pound for pound list, who lit it up earlier in his career. Now he's taking on, he's not that old either, but he's old for that weight class.
And yeah, old for the lighter weight.
Right. And now he's taking on Bam Rodriguez, who is just on a freaking roll right now, who's just hasn't even reached his peak, which is insane.
And he's having fun doing it, which I love. Like he's riding the wave, man.
Right. And if he takes down Estrada, you know, he's knocking off these icons of the lower weights, and he's running out of opponents. And that's the one thing about boxing that's interesting, and we're kind of conditioned as fans, is to string out a career. Like, don't take on an Estrada right after you take on a Sorungvisai, right after you take on a Quadras, right after you take on a Sonny Edwards. So, you know, space it out a little bit, but that's not the case with Bam Rodriguez. It's not the case at the lower weights.
Now the lower weights
just make the fights happen. They're probably easier to make because it's a little less money, even though there'll be a lot of eyeballs on this fight. But for Bam, sky's the limit. June 29th, that's going to be a fight that everyone will be watching over on DAZN. That's my number three. What do you got at three?
Fury Usyk. That's my number three.
See, I got. We're kind of like we're like trailing each other. Fury, yeah. Usyk, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I got Fury Usyk for my number three. It's a very meaningful fight. I would have this higher if it wasn't so dragged out. You know, it's lost a little bit of its luster because, one, it's taken too long. It should have happened a year and a half ago. Two, the Ngannou bad taste in my mouth is still there from Fury's abysmal performance against Ngannou. And then especially on the tail end of what Joshua just did to Ngannou, which is what Tyson should have done and didn't. So, but it's still a very meaningful fight. It's still a fight that we've been talking about for way too long. And it matters. And the fight really matters. It's a huge, huge fight. Unification heavyweight matters. Having a unified champion matters. It also opens up the rest of the division. Once this fight's in the rear view, we can start talking about all those other guys that are there. We can bring Joshua back into the mix of being a champion, being unified, potentially. You know, so there's a lot of great fights that are going to be on the tail end of this. So it is very, very meaningful. But in terms of how the fight's actually going to look, I don't think it's going to be that great of a fight. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Usyk, he is a master in there, how he deals with the size, athleticism, and awkwardness of Fury. But then also, if Fury does what he should do to win, he's just going to make it a slop fest. He's going to use his body. He's going to use his weight. He's going to be able to push Usyk around. He's going to, you know, he's going to just banging on his shoulders and his hips and pushing his head down, which is what I think he should do. This is all about getting the win. It doesn't really matter how you do it. Get the win, move on, get those big money fights down the way. So yes, the meaningfulness gets it as high as it is, but in terms of what's going to be the most exciting fight on there, it's probably the least exciting.
Yeah, I have it towards the top of my list because it's just four belt unification.
Yeah,
it's two of the biggest names in sport. It's a very big deal. It's going to open up the division, although they have a rematch clause. So I don't know how quickly we'll get some clarity. Like, I do think they'll fight again at the end of the year. But to me, this fight is down to me, Fury Usyk boils down to two simple narratives. For Usyk, he's taken on the biggest challenge of his career. Literally the biggest man in the heavyweight division. He's undersized, Usyk. We've seen him beat bigger guys than Anthony Joshua, but now he's taking on, quote unquote, the final boss, the biggest of them all, Tyson Fury. Can a little man beat a big man in the heavyweight division? That, to me, is always intriguing. And to me, that's the coolest part of the heavyweight division, is that a small guy like Mike Tyson can chop down big trees, and a small guy can beat a bigger guy. So I don't think we need a Bridgerweight division. That was a whole different discussion. But the other narrative of this fight is Tyson Fury. How is he going to look in this fight? There are questions about Tyson Fury inside of the ring, coming off of that Ngannou fight and coming off of him being 35 years old, aging a little bit, his dedication to the sport. He's made so much money. How is he going to deal with Usyk? Are we seeing signs of slippage from Fury? Or was the Ngannou fight just an aberration? Was the Ngannou fight just him overlooking an MMA fighter? That makes this fight interesting to me. Yes, it's drawn out a little bit. I totally agree. We got this in February. We'd be talking about the rematch sometime in the summer. And then we could talk about Anthony Joshua potentially fighting the winner once again. But cuts happen. That cut was real. There's no conspiracies there. We get it on May 18th, and it's going to be an awesome fight, I think. Will it be, like you said, Fury sitting on Usyk? Probably, because I think Fury, in the deep down the back of his mind, knows that I'm dealing with a different cat in this fight.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with...
Yeah, you said it's going to be an awesome fight. I think it's going to be an awesome event. I don't think it's going to be an awesome fight. I don't think it's going to be a meaningful... Okay. Not meaningful. Meaningful, yes. I don't think it's going to be one of those fights where it's like you're on the edge of your seat being like, whoa, maybe early on. But
yeah.
I think, like I said, I think if Fury's smart, he's going to make this thing ugly.
Right. That's what I mean. Like deep down inside, in the back of his mind, he knows that he's dealing with a different type of dude here in Usyk mentally, and a different type of dude as a boxer. So he might go back to some of those tactics that you saw early on before Wilder, the smothering, the using his weight, muddying things up, getting 9 rounds under your belt. So it should be interesting. May 18th. It's a really good card. It got some fights on there that probably make my honorable mention on the undercard. That's my number two. That's your number three, right? So what's your number two?
Bam and Estrada. Love that fight. Oh, love, yeah. Bam. Spoke a lot about it. Excellent fight. Awesome matchup. Always excited to see Bam. I think Bam's going to do it. I think he's going to win the fight, but I think he's going to have to really earn it. And I think we're going to probably see 12 rounds of a ton of punches thrown. I think you know, Bam is going to have to box more, and he showed he can. He showed he can box, but he's going to get dragged into fights, you know, and he's going to have scuffles throughout, because Estrada is just that kind of guy. He throws a ton of punches. He's super aggressive. He's a great counterpuncher. Good, you know, he's got good power. If you do the boxing math, of course Bam wins. You think of the Quadras fight. You know, Quadras dropped Estrada, and Bam took on a Quadras on 10 days notice and tuned him up. So, but boxing math doesn't always work. And especially when you got a guy like Estrada who understands that this might be one of his last hurrahs, or at least it's one of those last stand type fights where if you want bigger fights down in the future, you got to get past this young guy. So excellent fight. Really excited for that one. I spoke a lot about it already, but obviously our number one is the same.
Yes, this is why we're the best, Chris. This is our synergy, man. We were a little different on our top four, but we all had the same fights in there. So yeah. Our number one is obviously going to be Artur Beterbiev versus Dmitry Bivol. It was the overwhelming answer that I got on social media from fans. The fight that everyone wants to see. The most competitive fight you could make in boxing right now. Would you say that? Would you agree with that?
Yes. In terms of their careers and their trajectories, and you know, the fact they're both undefeated which has turned out to be a pretty deep weight class. They have some common opponents, and the competitiveness, because their styles clash. It's very, very interesting, man. I'm super excited for this fight. It checks all the boxes.
Right, they're up there in age. Beterbiev is 38 or 30. I'm terrible with ages. Everyone always comments on YouTube like, Dan,
I think he's 39.
Okay, he's 39. He's getting up there in age. Whatever. He's pushing 40. Bivol is in his mid 30s, but it's still a competitive fight. It's still, yes. These guys haven't shown. Hasn't really shown any sign of slippage whatsoever. Every fight that Beterbiev has. And, well, he's getting up there in age, and, well, he can't be this invincible. He hasn't shown. And he's so good. And the thing with Bivol is he hasn't shown anything. Where he can't sustain precise combination here and there. Combination here and there, precise combination here and there. He's still moved from his win over Canelo Alvarez. And since then, he's had performances over Gilberto. He just has not been active enough. But I haven't seen anything from Bivol to show me, all right, is he out perfect class, very tricky puzzle piece to figure out. It's on June 1st. It's got an unbelievable card underneath it that we'll get to with their honorable mention fights. This is it. This is number one. This is the clear consensus number one. I'm getting excited right now. Like, I'm just working myself up into a lather. I wish it was June 1st right now.
And we know why it's also really competitive, and why I'm super excited for this fight is because I keep flip-flopping on who I think is going to win. That really shows you the level of competition that we're talking about
like
here.
Crawford. It's like Spence Crawford, even though it turned out to be a whitewash. Like, I didn't.
Right.
I don't think,
and that's why I kind of hesitated when you said this is the most competitive fight, because I can see one guy or the other completely dominating and not making an actual competitive contest. But it is a competitive matchup. So that's with Spence and Crawford. It was a competitive matchup. Turned out not to be a competitive fight, which happens at the highest level sometimes. But this checks all the boxes. You got two guys who look unbeatable. They're not in their primes, but they're competing very close to it from what we've watched and what we've seen. And it's also very meaningful. Light heavyweight has been turned out to be a very good division. There's a lot of tough fighters in there, a lot of good fights to be made. And listen, man, we're in the age of unification, so this is a big deal. Very, very excited for this fight. I can't wait till we do our breakdown on this. This is going to be very interesting to tape study. But also, when I watch this fight, I am not even going to look at my phone. I am not doing any lives. I'm not talking to anybody. Do not even ask me to do a live on this one. I'm not going to comment. I'm not going to tweet. Nothing. I am going to watch this fight. I'm going to keep my eyeballs open the whole time. My eyes are going to be peeled watching this fight. I want to see everything that they're doing because it is a super high level fight, as well as, you know, obviously better be as a killer puncher, but he's a technician too. So we got two technicians in there. This is going to be a boxing head's dream fight.
Yeah. Full respect. This fight deserves full respect. I will be on my phone. I will be checking Twitter. Yeah, I will be texting Chris. But I also will be watching.
You'll be texting into the ether because Chris will not be answering.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for this one. June 1st, it's for all the marbles. And it's got some intrigue added to it if David Benavidez stays at 175 after his fight against Alexander Vozdik.
That's Vozdik.
Penciled in for June 22nd.
Hey, guys, remember, if you go back, Vozdik gave Beterbiev his toughest fight to date. Don't forget that.
I think Vozdik's shot.
He's definitely older and been out of the top. But just keep that in mind, everyone. I'm not saying that in terms of what he's going to do with Benavidez. Excuse me. I'm saying it in terms of what level that Vozdik was at, but also giving him credit for that, because I think a lot of people overlook his performance in that fight. I called that fight, and he fought a really, really good fight. He just faded late because he couldn't withstand the assault of Beterbiev, which, as we're seeing, most people don't make it that far anyway.
Yeah, these are fights that are scheduled. These are fights that are announced. Obviously, Frank Martin taking on Gervonta Davis is June 22nd. Would probably crack my top five, and I probably have put that in over Inoue Neary. Maybe, maybe not. But that is not a fight that's announced yet. It's heavily rumored. I'm pretty sure it's happening June 22nd in Houston, Texas, with Benavidez Vozdik as the co-main event and some other good fights on that card too. So that would maybe make the list. But I want to get into some of the other fights that I did not make my top five, but I'm really excited for Wilder and Zhang. It's on the undercard of Beterbiev and Bivol. This is once again a fight with two big names. I think it's going to be exciting in terms of the buildup. Could actually be a dud. And if you think about Wilder's last performance, if you think about Wilder's performances of the last 5 years, under 30 punches around.
Well, and then say, with Zhang, all of Wilder's fights are duds until he knocks you out.
Right. But that's what makes it fun. But he hasn't shown that knockout power, hasn't shown that fire, hasn't shown that desire. But Zhang, just coming off of just a very strange performance against Parker, the biggest fight of his career, looked like he wasn't in the best of shape. But he looked has a little more in the tank than Wilder. Like, Zhang did drop Parker twice, and he faded late. This is like a loser goes home type of fight. It's a last stand type of fight. That's what makes it kind of fun. It's two big names, it's heavyweights. I'm excited for that one.
Certainly the last stand for Wilder. He loses this one, then we're never going to see Wilder again. Zhang, I think, will have some more in him, even if he does lose this fight, especially if it's competitive and maybe, you know, if he gets clipped and gets starched or whatever. But if he goes out there and they go out there and they fight with their hands in their pockets and just stare at each other all night, we're probably not going to see either one of them anytime soon, even the winner. So hopefully, you know, Zhang can use his size, his physicality, and let those hands go and avoid that big right and actually make it a fight. But yeah, no, that's a good one too. But it definitely has a potential to be a dud.
You got some others on your list? I have some others as well. Jai Opatai versus Maris Bredas too. That's on the undercard of Fury Usyk.
And that's another one. It's important. Jai Opatai is phenomenal, and Bredas has been around forever. So that's one of those fights where it's kind of a passing of the torch kind of fight.
Yeah, Dubois versus Hergovic, Subriel Matias versus Liam Paro, Emmanuel Navarrete versus Dennis Baranchik. Those are some other ones as well. One fight that has not been on our list, that's not even on our honorable mention, is a fight that's coming up in less than 10 days. Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia. They're starting to pick up the press. We just watched Ryan Garcia have a media workout yesterday. He said he's going to light up a blunt in the ring after he beats Haney because it's on 420. What I noticed was that he still has a lot of weight to lose.
Yeah,
so he's looking pretty big in there. He's looking in big. Shape. He's
a little softer on the midsection, too.
Like, what would you say he's walking around at right now?
65.
Dude, that's crazy.
60,
so he's going to lose 25 pounds in less than 10 days?
Yeah. I mean, I always said he's a big guy. And but what scares me is the midsection. Like, he's not that lean. There's you can't do anything with body fat. It doesn't hold water. You know, if you're super full and your muscle holds water, that's what makes your muscle look full and round. You can pull water out of the body. Muscle is it holds water, so you can pull that weight out of that. Fat does, you can't do anything with it. It's just there. He actually looked in better shape than I figured. I thought he would, because the way he's looked, you know, from other clips. But yeah, no, he looks big, man. Easy. I mean, listen, guess what? Devin Haney's probably 160 right now, too. He's probably 55. Devin Haney's a big guy. He's a big kid, too, and he cuts a lot of weight. These guys know what they're doing. They're young. They're young. They cut a lot of weight. So yeah, Ryan is probably, you know, waking up in the morning 60 plus.
That's crazy. I was around Haney at the Top Rank gym last weekend or 2 weeks, well, less than like 10 days ago. And he's definitely more on weight than Ryan is. He's definitely
closer. He looks like he's cut out of stone.
Yeah, Haney is on another level right now.
Yeah, he looks like he is cut out of stone. He was chiseled.
He's taking great pride in showing off what he's up to right now, showing off his training regimen, showing off his focus. It's just a night and day difference when you look at social media. I know it's not the end all be all, but it's just a night and day difference.
But the funny thing is, with Ryan, it might not even matter. He hits hard, and he's got that speed.
You took the words out of my mouth. You took the words like right out of
my
mouth.
The kid could roll out of bed and knock out a lot of guys in the weight class.
Bro, that's what I'm saying. That, like, this fight is getting closer and closer, and so much of the conversation with Ryan Garcia has been about everything but the fight. It's been about, is he okay? Is he mentally fit? What is he tweeting? What is he saying? But when he gets into the ring, and you can kind of get away from all that, and you think about his raw abilities. Obviously, his raw abilities are power and speed. You can't really teach those types of things. He has it. He was born with that.
He's twitchy as hell.
This far. It's gotten him this far. It has made up for some of his deficiencies. Am I crazy to say that this guy could land something big on Devin Haney? Like, I don't think he can do it consistently, but can Ryan Garcia absolutely shock everyone by landing one of these looping power hooks that he's done in his career over and over?
I don't think he's going to hit Devin one of the looping power hooks, but listen, he landed some good, clean, hard, short right hands on Davis that made him put him on notice, and it made him box much smarter and take his time. So that's very possible. But yeah, Davis has shown to have a really good chin. I mean, Pitbull Cruz was cracking him with big shots early on, and he was taking him, walking through him. Devin, we haven't quite seen that. So it's not just that Ryan hits hard. It's that Devin has been shown to be to be susceptible to shots to the chin. So there's definitely a path. It's a very narrow path. But no, you're not crazy to think that that Ryan could land something. I mean, when you got a guy who's that twitchy, pulls that trigger, and he's got that explosiveness, that speed, that power, he's a dangerous guy. And that's why I meant about Davis. Davis knew that he was dangerous. He understood going into the fight he was dangerous, and then he saw it in front of him real time. He's like, okay, this guy, I got to make sure I'm not getting hit with these shots. I gotta mind my P's and Q's and make sure that I'm sticking to the game plan. But that's what Devin does, man. He sticks to the game plan. And there is a blueprint to beat Ryan Garcia. There's not a blueprint to beat Devin Haney.
Right. I couldn't agree more with what you just said. That was really spot on. But with Haney, is it like, is he really susceptible, or are we really basing it off of one Jorge Linares punch 3 years ago?
I mean, Linares, very, this is why he is, because Linares was super small for the weight. And
yeah, but he's a hard puncher.
Was he though at 35? I mean, yeah, he dropped Lomachenko with a good right hand. That was a couple years before, but I remember talking to Linares that night. I think he weighed in like 132. Like, he was so small. I remember being next to him. I'm like, God, this is a really small guy. And I heard that Devin was like in the 150s, mid 50s that night, and that was at 135. You know, so very, very small guy, very quick hands, sure, very sharp. But, you know, and Linares, you saw what he did at 140. He knocked out like three times. So,
and but when I think of like guys that are like susceptible, I think of more than just one incident. I think of isolated, I think of you know, consistent moments where they were rocked or mm-hmm. they were down or I don't know. I think that happens a lot in boxing where, you know, we see that a guy like Haney, who's been pretty invincible, has been right. Outside of the Lomachenko fight. He wasn't invincible there, but I did think he won. Kind of show one little moment of insecurity or one little moment where he let up his guard and he got cracked. So I don't know. I do think it's going to be interesting. I do think the narrative needs to shift a little bit away from how crazy is Ryan Garcia. Is he fit? Whatever. I think the fight is 100% happening. And I want to start asking the question, you know, can Ryan land something crazy? Because this isn't Gervonta Davis in there staring across from him. Devin Haney is damn good, but he's not the power puncher right. of Ryan of Tank Davis. He doesn't
meaning
have
that Ryan's going to have more time in the ring yes. to try and find yes. that punch.
He's going to have a little more wiggle room. He's going to have a little more leeway. He's going to have a little more what's the word I'm looking for? He's going to have a little more room for error, I feel like, in terms of surviving, not in terms of winning rounds, because I think Haney can control the fight. I'm getting excited for this fight, too. It's not even on our list, but that was a freaking damn good breakdown by us. Tap myself on the shoulder there. Let's move into quickly this weekend. Not the biggest weekend of fights, but we've got some heavyweight action over on Top Rank on ESPN. Jared Anderson returns to the ring off of a 6-mile, 130-mile-per-hour chase through Michigan, chasing the police around. Got a lot of stuff going on outside of the ring. Inside of the ring, he's damn good, but it's also like, where is his mental at? You know, how much does he love the sport? But he's 16-0 with 15 knockouts. He's taken on Riyad Mehri, who has a win over Tony Yoka just 126 days ago. For Anderson, this is a guy that we think is the next big thing in heavyweight boxing, but he's kind of been showing us that, like, A, doesn't love boxing. Some of his quotes are very
self-admitted.
B, has a lot of stuff going on outside of the ring. Like, C, like, how much does he care? Like, I think he's got the goods, but it's just going to be, like, above the shoulders for him.
Yeah, I don't think this fight is meaningful in terms of the matchup. It looks like a walkover, but I think that Top Rank is doing what Top Rank does, and it's very, very smart about how they do they match up their potential stars. And with a guy like Jared, he's got a ton of potential, a lot of earning potential. Heavyweights are a big deal. They make money, especially nowadays. And having an American heavyweight is a huge deal, and Top Rank understands that. So based on him, all the out-of-the-ring stuff that's looming, getting in there, being active, getting a win. But I think more than anything, I think Top Rank is testing Jared to see how he deals with outside influence. If he goes out there and is affected by all the bullshit around him and, you know, goes out there and puts up an okay performance, Top Rank's gonna be like, all right, cool, let's go cash this guy out. Because Top Rank is cold. They're cold-blooded, man. They are business first. But if he goes out there and he handles business the way that he should, and I think the way that he will, then it's like, all right, cool, we got a guy who can deal with this outside stuff. He thrives in chaos. Let's step him up again, back up to the big leagues. Because listen, he fought Charles Martin two fights ago, and then he had a comeback fight because, you know, a lot of people gave him heat for that performance. And then this is another one. You would think you would be stepping back up, but no. We're not stepping back up yet. Again, I think it's because of the out-of-the-ring stuff. So Top Rank is doing their due diligence to make sure they're not going to play with their potential and lose an opportunity by matching him up too tough while he's dealing with all this out-of-the-ring stuff. So I think this is a big crossroads fight for Jared Anderson in terms of what it means down the line. But in terms of the matchup, I don't see much coming back from Murray. He's a blown-up cruiserweight.
Yeah, it's a step up in an opponent with more experience. Like, Mehri is 31 years old. He has, you know, he's won his first 24 fights, 20 by knockout. When he turned pro, Anderson was 13 years old. He's got a little bit more experience, but he's giving up so much size. He's giving up so much reach. He's giving up height. You know, this is a guy who spent most of his career cruiserweight, lost a close decision to was Arsene Golarian, who just lost to Gilberto Ramirez,
yep.
But just to go back to Anderson and one of these quotes that really was like, whoa. He said, I got good at boxing and then I got stuck with it. It's been very much reported that, you know, his brother is in prison for a long time for attempted murder his brother's away for a long time. He has been on record saying I want to make big money, generational money by the time I'm 26. Well, he's 24 right now. You know, I credit him for being honest and saying, you know what, I'm in it just to make money. I'm in it just to get my family out of a bad situation. I don't really exactly love the sport. I the honesty is refreshing, but you would attest to this. Like, don't you need to be like fully focused to be top heavyweight or top boxer?
Not necessarily. When you've got that kind of talent, you know, you can kind of skirt by some of those things. And I think he's just such a natural athlete and such a natural fighter. You know, it made me think of that Spider-Man quote: "With great power comes great responsibility." Because you know, it's like, oh man, I got stuck with boxing. It's like, oh, too bad.
I did not think you were going Spider-Man quote on today's episode.
Oh man, I feel bad for you that you're so goddamn good at this at this sport that can make you millions of dollars. But no, listen, it's a tough out. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, if he could fight in a closet, he'd be the, you know, the best fighter we've ever seen. But dealing with the stresses of everything else that comes with it, listen, I get it, man. I get it. I always said I wanted to be rich, not famous. So it's a tough thing to handle. So I definitely get where he's coming from. But also, like, to your point, Dan, to your question, I just think he just wears his heart in his sleeve. That's just the way that he is. He's a very genuine guy. And you know, listen, life is coming at him very fast, and I think he's raw and I think he's open. I think it's part of why he's so endearing. But also he's super, super talented. So, listen, I've talked to him a few times, a great kid. It matters for us to have a great American heavyweight.
Hell yeah.
He can turn this sport up and down on its head.
Yeah,
I believe he is that good.
If he wants to.
But he's also super young, man. Maturity takes time. Maturity takes time.
I'm rooting for him.
We all are. I think we all are.
I know we're highlighting a lot of like negative things, but this is the story on him, unfortunately. You know, when you take the police on a 130 mile an hour chase for 6 miles, and right away he didn't exactly show a lot of remorse. He kind of said, like, you know, this is like part of my life. It might happen again. Like, it's tough. It's tough. And I know that fighters come from all different backgrounds, and most of them aren't great. But yeah, he seems like he's dealing with a lot in his personal life. Seems like he's in it for money, which is fine. But this is the conversation around him right now. We obviously know he's really good. He is a -900 favorite in this fight. He's going to stop Ryan Riad Mehry here, who's getting this fight because he upset Tony Yoka 126 days ago. For Mehry, he's got a complete different mindset. This is a guy coming off of the best win of his career. For what I know, he is very clear-minded and doesn't have anything going on outside, at least at the same level as Jared Anderson. He's just too small. He's just going to be too small in there. Does have some knockout power at cruiser. He has knockout streaks in his career of 5-5-6 during his 11-year career. So he goes on these knockout sprees, but he's in there with a really, really tough guy, and that's the main event. Efe Ajagba is fighting Guido Villanello. Villanello had a nice win at the Garden 2 months ago. Ajagba has reeled off some wins since that Frank Sanchez loss.
He's improved.
Yeah, I like Ajagba. I think he could be, I mean, in this new era we have of heavyweights where, you know, everyone's getting shots and we're actually matching up heavyweights. This is like a really important fight. So is Jared Anderson's really important fight to get to Saudi or get into that mix. Ajagba and Villanello, this is an important fight because they find themselves in the mix. They find themselves on one of these big cards in Saudi or one of these big cards with the heavyweights, because the heavyweights division is actually moving now. So when you see Ajagba, Villanello maybe 3 years ago, you would say, all right, this is just like a nice co-main. But for now, it's like, all right, you actually have a chance to like rise up a little bit and climb that ladder like you should. like normal sports.
Yeah, I like the matchup, and I like what I've seen from Ajagba. I've called a bunch of his fights, actually, and I wasn't very impressed early on. But recently he's been putting in some good work, and I think with his physical gifts and that right hand, yeah, we could see him in the mix with these guys. I mean, he's got some highlight reel knockouts. He's got the right size, right? Because we're in the new generation of heavyweights. He's got a good look.
He looks the part.
He's got a good look. I think he's still with K Caroma, and they've been doing a lot of work, and he's been improving, improving the jab, setting up that big right hand. And Guido, man, Guido is one of those guys. He's kind of had a little up and down, you know, through his career. This is the last stand for him.
I'm always going to root for the Italian guy.
Yeah, of course. We got to root for the Paisans. He's a super nice guy too.
When he fought at the Garden, he came out in a Yankee jersey.
You know,
pandering. It just looked cool. Like, got a big, big Italian.
He's a big dude, man. He's big
Italian heavyweight, rocking the Yankee jersey, and he had a big knockout. He was he had an overmatched. His opponent was really overmatched, but this is going to be a tough one for him. But the whole card, Robson Conceição. This is strange. We were talking about this on text, like fighting eight rounds, junior lightweights against Jose Guardado. Abdullah Mason returns.
Who impresses every time out.
Right, 18 years old. Put him in there. Or in the discussion with Carmel Motan in terms of future of the sport, like real future. Like, now I'm not talking about, like, you know, in a year or two, like Keyshawn Davis. I'm talking like 3, 4, 5 years. Who can be the face or who could be a name in boxing? It's Abdullah Mason's one of them. Carmel Motan is one of the other ones. So I will be watching Abdullah Mason early on. He's fighting Ronald Ron. That's eight rounds at lightweight. Ruben Villa is also on this card.
He's back. I like Ruben Villa, man. He's talented. He's a good fighter.
This is like a typical
top rank card, man. They stack them.
They're very smart. They scatter their prospects. Every time I see a top rank card announced, I actually go and look at the entire card. I'm like, all right, so what's their thought process here? Like, what prospect are they putting on this card? You know, what prospect are they stacking towards the top? Who are they moving up? In February, it's like, all right, let's put Shushu Carrington on the main portion. Let's have him be the first fight of the night on regular ESPN. Awesome to watch. Really cool part of top rank is this thing right here, is how they move Abdullah Mason, how they move a Bruce Carrington, how they move an Emiliano Vargas. So that is cool. So we got some boxing this weekend. We got some heavyweights at the top. We got some up-and-comers there. That's really it. Jordan, that's also this weekend. Jordan Gill versus Zelpha Barrett over on DAZN. Ellie Scottney is in action this weekend. There's a pro box that by the time this episode comes out would have already happened. So we're already in the future, Chris.
Yeah, this is the Terminator timelines. I'm here in Plant City right now.
Oh, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man and a Terminator.
You know what it is? I'm spending way too much time with Paul Amanaji. He makes movie references nonstop and it's hard to keep up. So now it's starting to rub off on me.
Jeez. I mean, I don't hate him. When I was working at John Boy, I was always the movie reference guy, but my references are like from 2003, 2004, like a lot of Anchorman, a lot of old school.
The classics. And everybody at John Boy office was like years old then.
Crickets. I would be like Anchorman, though, that escalated quickly, or like Anchorman line. And everyone would just be like, what's that?
The hell's old man Dan talking about?
Right. Get this senile old man out of here. Still getting a senile old man out of here. Both of us are out of here. Thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the fights. Enjoy whatever you're doing. My Yankees are kicking ass. I'm going to watch a lot of Yankees this weekend. Going to go to my niece's third birthday. Going to just try to relax a little bit before things kick up, because next weekend we're going to be in Brooklyn, baby.
Let's go.
Brooklyn.
Be down.
I got Chris a nice hotel. Going to put him up like a king. Mm-hmm. We're going to go over to the Barclays. We're going to bring you guys the best content, and you're going to order the fight on PPV.com. Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney. I'm starting to get a little more excited for that fight.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing a lot of work for it. We got a bunch of videos for you guys doing some breakdowns and how these guys match up and what they're good at and stuff like that. We know you guys love that stuff. So we put in that work way in advance, so we'll be dropping that soon. But yeah, I mean, listen, we always say we're fight fans. Even if we don't like fights or fights don't look good, by the time we get to it, we're still excited.
Yeah.
It's boxing, man.
It's a big one. I think there's going to be a really big rollout in terms of fans. I know the ticket sales aren't doing great. I think there's going to be a big walk-up. I think there's going to be a big last-minute pay-per-view push. And you're going to want to order it with PPV.com. All right, that's it, everybody. Have a great weekend. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. See you next time.